Hi, I'm Mark Budd.
And I'm Jair Briggs Davis.
And we're from Mark and Jair Explain Sports.
This is a tripod production.
The following is a tripod production. Do not attempt to adjust your dial. Mark Budd and Jair Briggs Davis, two friends growing up in the Big Apple, two friends who became sports writers at the top of their craft. Mark, the assistant sports editor of Drexel University's The Triangle. Jair, the color commentator and reporter at Curry College. On their own, they give their own unique insights. However, together, Mark and Jair explain sports.
So welcome to episode 11 of Mark and Jair Explain Sports. I'm here with 2018 NABJ Sports Task Force Journalist of the Year, Rob Parker from Fox Sports 1. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Appreciate it.
So, Rob, I'm going to hand it over to my co-host, Mark Budd. Mark, you can start.
All right. So, Rob, my first question for you is, how has it been adjusting to this new world that we're currently living in where we don't have live sports? It's a lot hard. I know from me and Jair doing our podcast, it's a lot harder because we have to be more creative because there's no sports now. So you working with Fox, how has that been for you so far adjusting?
Yeah, it's been an adjustment the last three or so months, trying to figure out, you want to be compelling. There's stuff to talk about. Thank God that, the Jordan documentary was out there, Tom Brady moving to Tampa. So there were some stories that helped it along. Chris and I, when we do the Odd Couple radio show, we're not into lists and stuff like that. A lot of guys rely on things like that. That's late. So we try to come up with our own takes on stuff, original content, not just responding to what's out there, not talking about the same three or four topics every day. So we really did a nice mix. I'll give you a perfect example. The other day was the 50th anniversary of when Doc Ellis pitched a no-hitter for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he claimed that he was on LSD when he did it. So it was the 50th anniversary. So what we did is we got his son, Doc Ellis the third, to talk about his dad, to talk about, did his dad ever talk to him about that moment, you know, and what he felt like. So I looked like that was a little something different, you know, to spread the net and try to find something that was interesting. And it wasn't like we made up something. It was the 50th anniversary exactly when we had Doc Ellis the third on.
Rob, I have a question here for you, and it goes by with what you said recently about Steph Curry isn't the greatest shooter of all time. Do you think it's more fair to say that he isn't the clutchest shooter of all time rather than say he isn't the greatest shooter of all time?
No, I think they go hand in hand. How can you be the greatest shooter of all time when in big spots you're 0-9? When you had a chance to win a playoff game for your team, you're 0-9. That's not like if you're going to call somebody the greatest of all time, then you have to nitpick through everything. And to me, if you don't have a signature moment or have a shot like that, you can make all the trick Harlem Globetrotter threes you want to make during the regular season and half court and all that. Where are the big shots and the big moments? So I believe that they go hand in hand. To call somebody the greatest shooter of all time, and he hasn't made those kind of shots, I just don't think that being the greatest shooter means clutch as well.
I agree with you, Rob. I feel like, especially when once Kevin Durant joined them, he was hitting the big shots for them.
Kevin Durant was making the big shots. Kevin Durant took the Warriors like he took Steph's lunch money. I mean, let's just be honest. Steph hasn't won an NBA Finals MVP, right?
Iguodala won it when Durant was on the team.
And Steph, again, you will call him the greatest shooter, and I'm not saying he's a bum or he's not a great player, but even when they choked down a 3-1 lead to Cleveland, first time in NBA history a team had ever lost a 3-1 lead to lose a championship, Steph is this great shooter, right? He couldn't get them to – he couldn't win them one game. He couldn't win them one. They had three games to win one. Two of the games were in Oakland, and they lost all three. That was the year they won 73 games. And they didn't lose three games in a row all year. So I'm just saying, if you're that great, don't tell me you can't win one game. So I have a hard time with people just wanting to anoint people the greatest of all time. I take it very, very seriously. And I don't believe everybody's as great as people make them out to be.
So who would you choose to be the best?
I would take Ray Allen any day or Reggie Miller to make a big shot for me in a big spot. Ray Allen's made more threes career-wise. I know Steph will eventually pass him. But I'm just saying, right here, right now, and the game is on the line, he saved LeBron's bacon against the Spurs.
Yeah.
That is one of the greatest shots in NBA history. Am I right?
Yeah.
Off a missed free throw, a rebound, a kick out, and he drains to save the Miami in that spot. Ray Allen's made big shots in his career. Reggie Miller, I was there when he scored those, whatever it was, 13 points in 9 seconds against the Knicks at Madison Square.
8 points, 9 seconds, 95.
Thank you. I was at that. I covered that game. I've seen Reggie Miller do stuff like that. I was sitting baseline. I actually saw underneath the basket, I saw Reggie Miller throw down Greg Anthony and got the ball when Anthony Mason was inbounding. I was sitting right there. I don't know how the referee didn't see it, but I would take one of those two guys over Steph in the big moment. I would take Clay with the basketball.
Okay, then. I could give you respect on that. Oh, yeah.
I would in a big spot to make a big shot. I'd take Clay first.
Definitely.
Also, just one more, also look at the Last Dance doc. Like, it was game six of the 98 Eastern Conference Finals, too, when the Pacers' lives were on the line, too, right? When Reggie hit that clutch three?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you got to have – if I were to ask you for Steph's signature moment, all the people who are barking at me on social media, they keep talking about the shot he made against Charlotte to tie the game.
Against Charlotte, though.
Charlotte.
No, but that's what they use. And I'm like, what? I'm like, he had 9 chances to win a playoff game, right? 9. And he's 0-9. Go back to the last finals in that game 6 when Clay got hurt and all that. He had a chance to win that game. Remember they were down by 1 at the end of the game? He had a chance to win the game. He didn't even need a 3. He could have taken a step in or 2 and made a 2 and would have won the game, forced the game 7. That's what I'm talking about. It was right there. He had an open look. He missed it.
I do see your point, though.
No, I completely agree.
That's all I'm saying. It's just like you guys are young, right? But the Buffalo Bills went to 4 straight Super Bowls.
Jim
was their quarterback. Nobody puts Jim Kelly in the greatest of all time conversation. He went to 4 Super Bowls in a row, but they didn't win. Same thing. Marv Levy was their coach. When they talk about the greatest coaches of all time, his name doesn't come up. Sports has a short menu, wins and losses. And that's why when you factor in everything, And Steph's a Hall of Famer. He's a great player. That's not the issue. I'm not ready yet to call him the greatest the greatest shooter of all time.
Okay. So, Rob, do you think that when sports return, especially the NFL, do you believe a good part of the players are going to kneel? Like, I know, I read your article recently for Deadspin that you think they should just get rid of the national anthem in general, which I agree with. I just, I don't know if that's realistic.
My only point is you take it out of the mix so that there's not people going to feel a certain way if they're kneeling. That was my reason. No one else, when you go to work or school, nobody stands up for the national anthem at any other job. It's only, when you go to a concert or a movie or anything, it's only at sporting events. And it wasn't even done. When it first was introduced to the American public, it used to be in the 7th inning of a baseball game.
Right.
And it was to rally the troops in World War I. So it wasn't even before the game. It was in the 7th inning. And obviously, Take Me Out to the Ball Game took the place of that in the 7th inning, and they started doing it. In the NFL in 2009, players weren't even required to come out for the national anthem. it was once the Defense Department and the National Guard started paying the NFL that they made it a big deal. So I just don't, it doesn't make you any more, any less of an American. You've been to the ballparks. There are people in the bathroom buying concessions, doing everything, right? During the national anthem. Everybody doesn't take their hat off. I mean, I've been covering sports for 34 years. I've heard my share of national anthems, trust me. And a lot of people aren't even paying attention.
Definitely.
So, Rob, when it comes to the potential NBA return, I saw what you said about Kyrie Irving and his stance on returning. Do you think that, well, I understand about how people need to address the issues of racial oppression and everything like that, but do you think that players should, like, what do you feel about if players return to Orlando to finish up the season, but they use that platform to showcase their stance on racial injustice?
That's fine. I mean, everybody has their different opinion. My point was, don't just discard or poo-poo Kyrie Irving. He's not just, you know, like all the conspiracy theorists, and he has an agenda. He doesn't want to see LeBron win. I think that's all not. It's not. First of all, it's not guaranteed that LeBron's going to win anything. Number two, I think he's always been a conscious brother who is about, you know, other people. So this fits his mold of what he's about. So if this is his concern, and the people say, well, why is Kyrie saying all this? He's the VP of the Players Union. This is what he represents, other players. Carmelo Anthony's on the record. And then if you're saying he's trying to derail LeBron, Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, who are both on the Lakers, agree with Kyrie. So it ain't just a Kyrie situation. There are other players out there. Dwight Howard has never won a championship. He has a chance to win. He said he'd rather the community win and changing laws and you know, using this moment rather than winning a championship. What does that say? People just, because it's Kyrie and because he said some stuff, you know, in the past years, doesn't negate what he's talking about. All I said is, it's legit. His concern about being a distraction is legit.
So this goes, this helps my question. So do you believe that most players, especially like MLB, NFL, and NBA, do you think they actually want to come back and play this season? Like,
I think it's mixed. I bet you if you secretly ask them, nobody wants to give up their pay. I mean, look at the baseball players. They went from some guys making, you know, they're only going to make like a third of what their salary is. They're only going to play, I think, 60 games or something like that. So it's less money for them. It's going to be weird. No fans in the stands. You know, the chance of catching the corona is still there. You see college players already. They haven't even played any games yet. And they're already, what was it, Alabama and Houston, I think.
Auburn.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So they're already catching it. So I'm sure that they're not that thrilled about it. I guess you got to try to fight and make it as safe as possible. And I get the NBA on some players on why they're not interested in being, you know, in a bubble. I do get that because – can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
You know, to be isolated from your wife and your kids, you know, for the most part, and to be in that situation where you can't move around freely. These guys are multimillionaires. They can't live in like the life of being trapped. You know what I mean? And not being able to have any contact other than your basketball teammates seems like a lot to ask. So I can get why some people aren't that thrilled about it.
Yeah, my dad pointed out to me the other day that, especially with the NBA in Florida, like originally when they had the plan, there wasn't a lot of coronavirus cases, but now Florida, they're like increasing every day because people.
Yeah, because they're out on the beach and they're partying and they're, I mean, you see, you know, they open the beaches in Florida and people flock there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not surprised with some of these places where, you know, cases are spiking again. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So, Rob, do you see any scenario where potentially Major League Baseball could, like, cancel their season? Or do you really think, like, with every single day passing by, it could just trim down to 40 or 50 games, maybe 60?
No, it's been, I believe, Bob Nightingale from USA Today has already reported that it's a done deal. It's going to be 55 to 60 games starting mid-July, and it'll end on September 27th. So the commissioner had the right to impose. There's no to impose this if the two sides couldn't make an agreement. So I'd rather have 60 games than no games. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It would have been better to have a half a season, 82. But these are unusual times. People are still trying to figure it all out. And the difference between baseball and the other sports is that baseball never got started. The other sports didn't have to negotiate the pay scale because they were already in the midst of their seasons when the pandemic hit. So baseball was in a unique situation more so than the other sports.
So Rob, being that you've been around in the sports world a long time, who's your favorite?
A dinosaur? Is that what you're saying?
No. Who's your favorite athlete, celebrity, or media personality that you've been around during your career?
There's a few. Joe Dumars, I covered with the Pistons. Cecil Field, his dad, when he with the Tigers and Yankees, I covered him. Eric Davis, when I covered him with the Reds. David Justice, the Atlanta Braves. Darryl Strawberry with the Mets. A lot of baseball guys. But those are some of the guys who I've really connected, you know, with over the years, and just enjoyed covering them and the way that they treated the media and understood what their jobs were, and that we're not there for ourselves. We're there for the fans. And once players understand that, you know, we don't have to have an adversarial relationship. I'm just trying to ask the questions that fans at home want to know. What happened, or, you know, why, how did it feel, or, you know, or how did you hit that home run, or what was the feeling after it? Or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's why we're there. Not for our personal interests. We could care less, to be honest, whether teams or players win or lose.
Yeah, it seems like guys sometimes get, like, super annoyed with the media. Like, I don't know, like, Russell Westbrook over the years has gotten to a lot of, like, back and forth with the media.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think it's just wasted energy. And you know what happens a lot of times is these same guys all try to get in the media after they're done, and then they want to be friendly. You know, it's an old saying. There are people trying to say hello when it's time to say goodbye at the end of their careers. Now they want to, you know, say hello and be nice to you. So you don't want to be like that. I'm just saying, just respect the job. We have a job to do. We're not there to make your life difficult. Just come out and give the press 5 or 10 minutes and then go on about your – some guys would rather hide in the training room for an hour or two rather than come out and talk for 5 or 10 minutes. I could never understand that.
Definitely.
I've been there before on that. Yep. Rob, would you mind explaining how you got involved in the Baseball Writers Association of America and the Hall of Fame voting process?
Yes. It is my prized possession on this earth, since I don't have any children. I started covering baseball in New York, and I started covering Major League Baseball in 1986. I was 22 years old. And my first job, second job, at the Daily News in New York. And the Mets made it to the World Series that year. I got to cover my first World Series in 1986. I was there for Bill Buckner, the ball going through his legs, the famous game. So I got a baseball writer's card 4 years later in 1990. And that was, this is my 40th year. 30th year. This is 20. The Daily News, when you cover baseball, you have to cover baseball a certain amount of time to get your card. And I got my card. And it is you have to have it for 10 straight years in order to get a vote for the Hall of Fame. So when I first started, I think my number was something like 700 and something. You know, I was in the 700s. I'm now number 86. So your number drops every year when people move on, retire. Do you know what I mean? Seniority. So basically, there's only 85 other people in the country who have covered more baseball than I have.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty incredible. And so my vote is very important to me. If I don't vote for you, I'm very strict on it. There's certain magic numbers. If you have 3,000 hits, you have 500 home runs, you have 300 wins, you automatically get my vote. I don't need to look at the rest of your stats. If you were around long enough to amass those stats, then you get my vote. And then the other one is, if I vote for you the first time you're on the ballot, I vote for you the entire time you're on the ballot. If I don't vote for you the first time on the ballot, I never vote for you. So we've seen guys recently get elected in their 10th or 15th, their last year, which I don't understand. And this is one thing I disagree with my brother in. If you didn't vote for a guy for 15 years, why would you vote for him because it's his last year on the ballot? Either you're a Hall of Famer or you're not. It should not be he got in his second, third year. Either you get in, if you're a Hall of Famer 3 years later, you should have been a Hall of Famer your first year. So I don't believe in that first and second and third year. Either you are or you aren't a Hall of Famer. And that's the way people should look at it.
And when you're deciding on to vote the guy in or not, do you think about, like, I know you said if they have like a really good batting average, you're not even going to look beyond that. But what about like their PED history? Do you take that into consideration?
No, I don't, unless someone was busted after Major League Baseball put the rule in place. Prior to the rule, I voted for Mark McGwire. I vote for Sosa, Bonds, okay. Clemens. None of those guys were under the – there was no law or rule on the books about the use. They were not banned substances during that time. Once baseball changed – and like Manny Ramirez, one of the greatest right-handed hitters I ever saw. I don't vote for Manny because he got busted two or three times after the rule was put in place. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So prior to that, you should be grandfathered in because we don't have a test for everybody during that era. I don't think it's fair. I always look at it would be like the state of California didn't have a seatbelt law in the 70s, right? So now, of course, it does. So now they were to send me tickets for me driving in the 70s with no seatbelt, knowing that, you know what I'm saying? Like saying, we're going to penalize you now because we know you didn't wear your seatbelt back in the 70s. That doesn't make any sense to me. If you caught me in 2020 without a seatbelt, I deserve a ticket. If you caught me after 2005, I think, when they implemented the new rule, then you should be busted and penalized. Prior to that, I don't believe it.
Oh, Rob, so speaking of which, because you bring up Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and that era, did you catch the 30 for 30 on both?
Yes, I did. It was a great magical moment, man. They were breaking into games. I mean, it was incredible to watch. It helped save baseball. I think what's happened to both of those guys is wrong. I vote for Sosa. I voted for McGwire. He's no longer eligible. He's off the ballot. Mark McGwire, go look up his stats at USC. He was a home run hitter in college. Go look at his rookie year when he had 49 home runs. Go look at the video. He's this big. He's not big. So he's always been a home run hitter. This idea that he took steroids and it transformed him into a home run hitter is false. It's a false narrative. He's one of the great home run hitters. I looked it up once, I think, in 57 college games one year. I think he hit over 30-some-odd home runs in 57 games, which is incredible. So he's always been a home run hitter.
Fair to say. Mark?
So do you think so Roger Goodell recently made a statement that he was wrong about the Kaepernick situation was handled, and you saw the video, right? He made a whole video.
Yeah.
do you think that he spoke with the owners that he was going to do it? Because I know he works for the owners, but I find it hard to believe that all the owners were agreed with what he said.
Well, I doubt they all agreed, but I think the majority, and especially the NFL, was painted into a corner. I mean, what could you say now, seriously, after seeing George Floyd murdered on the streets of Minneapolis and seeing what was going on in the country? And when you get that many people out in the street and they're burning down and protesting and rioting, you cannot discount that at all to move people. And to see all those young people out there who want a different world, and this is enough is enough, I think the NFL was painted into a corner, and any other action would have been bad for the league had they not supported it. So I think Roger Goodell understood that. He took the cue and told Leon, this is what has to happen. And the owners who don't agree with it, we haven't heard from. Where's Jerry Jones? Have we heard from Jerry Jones? He's a ghost now. This guy's on radio show. He does TV in Dallas. He's always a open mic. Jerry's the first guy to go on an open mic. Now we can't.
His press conferences after games.
Right. Before the coach. So I think the owners who want to be quiet have been quiet.
Definitely.
Hey, Rob, a lot of people are taking a stance on hate, bigotry, and racism today. And you covered the Cincinnati Reds for the Cincinnati Inquirer in 1991, right?
Yes.
Yes. I heard you talk to Kevin Euclid the other day. And the renaming of Marge Schott, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah, Marge Schott. Yeah, the University of Cincinnati.
Yeah,
her charity donated $2 million, and they put her name on the stadium. And a couple of the black players who on the team this year got a petition together to get rid of it. If you remember, Marge Schott was crazy, and she wasn't just, you know, she. And I'm just quoting her, but she said that Hitler wasn't bad in the beginning. If you could believe, like, she would make some sort of excuse as if he was okay because he was paving the roads in Germany. And yet she's, like, discounting the murder of 6-7 million Jews, you know, in the process. She also called Eric Davis and Dave Parker her million-dollar N-words and whatnot. And she eventually was forced to sell the team. So a lot of the players, Kevin Euclid is probably the greatest player to come out of the University of Cincinnati. He's Jewish. He was bothered at one point. The school wanted him to make a large donation, and they were going to put his name on the stadium. It was going to be Kevin Euclid Field at Marge Schott Stadium. And he said his dad was like, oh, that would be a great thing to have your name on the stadium, but you can't have your name next to her. You know what I mean? It would hurt their family name. And so he signed a petition. So that petition is still going. There's a good chance they're going to get that name removed from the University of Cincinnati baseball stadium.
Yes. Also, a question for you is, like, have you, like, since you worked close with the Reds, like, have you ever had to interview or work with Marge Schott?
Oh, absolutely. I used to call her at home. I mean, I've talked to her from the 1992 All-Star game. We flew on the same small plane back from Toronto together, and she talked my ear off, but she was not a nice person to a lot of people. Yeah. And at one point, she didn't like the column that I wrote about. I said that she ran the Reds like a mom and pop store because she was so cheap. And they took my press dining room card. I couldn't eat in the press dining room. You couldn't pay, like, it was or a part of it, so they would just take your card, and so you couldn't eat there. So Eric Davis was on the team. He found out that I wasn't eating, and he had a pizza delivered to the press box for me one night for dinner, because he's like, you can't work 8 hours without eating, you know what I mean? You gotta have something. So it was a nice gesture, and some of the other players did it as well, sent up food for some of the writers because she wouldn't let us eat. And Marge was, this is the degree of her cheapness. They would have a company meeting, and they would have donuts and coffee or whatever. So after the meeting, Marge would personally go around to people who weren't involved in the meeting and sell donuts to to the rest of the staff. So she would come to your desk and go, do you want a donut? Like, these are leftover donuts. She leave them out if somebody wants one. She's selling them. And then one year for Christmas, she gave for like Christmas presents. This is like in 1991 or something. 1995 or something. Christmas presents were chocolate candy bars. And when you open the inside of the wrapper, so this is like 1995, the inside of the wrapper said, win a free trip to the 1988 All-Star Game. So they were like 5 and 6 year old chocolate bars that she gave away as Christmas gifts. Oh, God.
I hope you didn't get sick, like you ate one and then you saw the wrapper after.
But these are the stuff that she did. I mean, it was incredible.
Rob, my last question for you is that, assuming the leagues do come back, do you think that the champions of this season or whenever they play are not going to be taken as seriously? Like, do you think the intensity is going to be higher? Are they going to have like a Zoom parade? Like, how are they going to handle this
whole? Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think people always remember it as the pandemic kind of championships. And I don't believe, Chris and I don't believe in asterisks. Whatever's in front of you, you got to play. And so I'm calling the NBA championship the Mickey Mouse championship, since it's being played in Orlando at Disney World. So, I think it'll be a little tainted in some people's mind, but everybody has a fair chance to win. So whoever wins, they're going to count.
Rob, my last question to you is, like, you know, how do you manage your time, like, being all over the place, like, covering baseball, covering so many types of sports, like, being involved with USC? Like, how do you manage all this?
Yeah, it's a busy schedule. You got to be organized. But I live for it. I mean, I love every minute of it, between teaching at USC, the radio show every night, FS1, covering games, writing columns for Deadspin. This is all I've ever wanted to do since I was 9 years old, and I cherish every single day. And I work myself the entire day until I'm exhausted, and I'm going to do it as long as I can. I enjoy it. It doesn't feel like real work. Real people got to go out and do real hard work. Digging ditches and building buildings and stuff that they really don't want to do. So I'm fortunate enough to do what I want to do. So I embrace every day and work as hard as I can.
Thank you so much, Rob. I appreciate it. So, yep. So that wraps it up for this week. I have Rob Parker here with Mark Budd. Rob, thank you so much for joining.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you so much, Rob.
To listen to more Tripod Productions, go to thetriangle.org/podcasts.